Hello again, and welcome to the latest episode of Cooper Talks, although it won't be the latest after I've done another one, but still, that's the way these things work. Yes, hello. I'm going to be talking to you today about the Vietnam War, which is part of the Cold War series of podcasts that I'm doing at the moment. Now, the Vietnam War is huge. In fact, it's so big it could be studied as an entire GCSE topic on its own. Now, that's not my purpose here today. I'm not going to go into that much detail. Although, if people do have any requests, and leave any requests or comments in the comments boxes, I might in the future go into a bit more depth on the Vietnam War. But this is really more kind of an overview. Because although the main two protagonists, the USSR and the USA, didn't actually come to blows in the Vietnam War, it was in the background for quite a long time during the whole Cold War experience. In fact, the origins start during World War II, and the main American involvement will go from the 50s up to the 70s. So not quite, but depending on your definitions, lasting almost about 18 to 20 years. And it will shape American reactions as well as the USSR's reactions. And there's the involvement of China, which has become a particular force, a communist force, as part of the atmosphere. So although you might not need to know about the Vietnam War in great detail for a general study of the Cold War, it is important to know because it relates to and underpins an awful lot of other things. So, first thing, where on earth is Vietnam? Quite literally, where on earth is it? Very good idea to get a map, or Google a map, or whatever it is you crazy guys do. But Vietnam is in Southeast Asia. It's just below China. And originally, it was a territory. Well, actually, originally goes a long way back. However, at the start of the 20th century, it was part of a French colony called French Indochina. And it bordered on the western side, it reached sort of Thailand and up to, where does it go up to? Thailand's the main one. I think it goes up to Myanmar today, which was British Burma, part of British India at the time. So what we now regard as three separate countries, Cambodia, Laos and Vietnam, were all part of French Indochina. They were governed by the French, who tended to prioritise Catholics in what was largely a Buddhist country, and ran it as most colonial powers ran things, which was for their own benefit. Not particularly well. There were some advantages, but not many. And the native Vietnamese in particular were not happy about the situation. Things got even worse during World War II, because when the Japanese were invading mainland Asia and they were at war with the French, and obviously the French, the Free French as they called themselves, based in Britain as opposed to Vichy France or Nazi occupied France, they were part of the war effort on the Allied side against the Japanese. And so the Japanese had invaded Vietnam. Now, the Japanese saw themselves as liberators, removing European oppressors from Asian colonies. Okay. However, many people in Vietnam did not see the Japanese as liberators. They were just as bad as the French, as far as they were concerned. They were still an outside force trying to colonize them and subjugate them. And the Japanese empire at this time did have quite a brutal reputation. So, although the French were quite quickly removed because of the fall of France in Europe, the Japanese quite easily overcame and captured French Indochina. But then the Vietnamese took up arms fighting against them. These were a group of people called the Viet Minh, and they were led by a guy called Ho Chi Minh. Now, Ho Chi Minh was first and foremost a Vietnamese nationalist. His main driving force is that he wants Vietnam to rule itself. He wants Vietnam to be free from all outside influences, colonies, okay, whether it's the French, the British, the Japanese, the Americans, the Chinese, whoever, he wants them out. Now, unlike, say, Fidel Castro, who wanted Cuba to be free from corrupt regimes, Ho Chi Minh had actually been converted to communism. He'd studied in the USSR. And so, although he's primarily a nationalist, he is also very clearly a communist. Now, in World War II, that wasn't really a problem for the Allies because the big threat were the Nazis and the Axis powers. And the Viet Minh, led by Ho Chi Minh, actually did rather well. And they actually managed to kind of liberate themselves from Japanese rule. And they occupied the northern city of Hanoi and declared Vietnam to be independent. So, I mean, you could kind of see it a little bit like Yugoslavia, I suppose. The Viet Minh helped push back the Japanese and made themselves independent. However, despite the fact that America, after World War II, was pretty much opposed to imperial possessions and didn't like Britain and France continuing to have empires, they really, and this goes back to kind of the emergence of the Truman Doctrine after World War II, they really didn't like the idea of Vietnam falling under communist jurisdiction. Remember, this is at a time where China isn't yet officially communist or hasn't become communist yet, although the fighting is going on. So rather than allow the Viet Minh to take control of an independent Vietnam, and because they were more focused on Europe than they were with Asia, the Americans agreed that the French could go back and basically just occupy French Indochina, the whole region, which the French did. Unsurprisingly, Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Minh were not very happy about this. And so they basically continue a war against the French forces across French Indochina, but mostly focused around modern day Vietnam. Now, they get a boost in 1949, when China does become communist under Chairman Mao Zedong, and especially with the Americans being distracted at this time from 1950 with Korea. So things get going, and Ho Chi Minh basically establishes a northern stronghold and becomes kind of a communist state. Now, the USA didn't really want this to happen, but they didn't want to be seen as invading Vietnam or as an imperial power themselves. So they sent lots of troops and money, about $500 million a year, to help the French in an imperial conquest, which the Americans said they were really opposed against, but against the Viet Minh, okay? And that was to help the French defeat communism. So we've got that Truman Doctrine coming through here and part of the domino theory. So the domino theory is this idea, it's part of the Truman Doctrine, that if one country in Southeast Asia falls, then the rest will fall like dominoes. Okay, so you flick one, the rest will go down. So China goes communist in 49. If Vietnam goes next, then Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, then you get Burma, maybe India, and Pakistan, and so on and so on. And communism would sweep through Europe. So they wanted to cut off the domino, if you like, effect from happening in Vietnam. So they poured money in and helped the French out with equipment and so on. Unfortunately, the French were struggling. And eventually, in 1954, there was a battle in northern Vietnam in a place, I'm very sorry, my Vietnamese is appalling, but Dien Bien Phu, which is in the north of Vietnam, and the French basically had to surrender to the Vietnamese forces, and that was it. They were defeated, and the French realised they would have to withdraw. Now, at this stage, the Viet Minh only really had control over the northern part of Vietnam. The southern part of Vietnam had still been in French hands. But because of the defeat at Dien Bien Phu, they decided to hold a peace conference in Geneva. The French said, well, we're out. And what they did was they, much like in Korea, divided Vietnam in half, this time along the 17th parallel. And in the northern part, it would be run by Ho Chi Minh and would be communist. And in the southern part, that would be a nominally democratic republic. And that was agreed in Geneva in 1954. Now, here's where it gets a bit more complicated. Originally, as part of this Geneva meeting in 1954, the agreement had been that there'd be elections in 2 years to decide whether or not to reunite the whole country and whether the Vietnamese would be able to decide how they were going to be ruled. Okay. Now, here's the problem. If there were free and fair elections, there was a very good chance that the people of South Vietnam would rather be ruled by Ho Chi Minh, communist or not, because he's Vietnamese, rather than French-appointed Vietnamese. And that was a big problem. So they didn't really want there to be free and fair elections, because they were pretty confident that the non-communist side would lose and Vietnam would become a unified communist state. So they weren't so keen. And do remember, of course, that after World War II, it was a criticism that Stalin hadn't really allowed free and fair elections in Eastern Europe. So kind of the boot on the other foot here. Now, as a result of this, the Americans tried to establish a successful regime in South Vietnam, trying to head off any potential loss in the elections. And there was a king, or was it an emperor? I think it was a king. But the prime minister, who was kind of the guy in charge of the Republic of South Vietnam, was called Ngo Diem, or Diem, D-I-E-M. So he'd taken over after Geneva. So in 1955, he becomes the prime minister and then effectively the president of the Republic of South Vietnam. And the Americans decide he's the guy they're going to back. They're going to help him stay in power, kind of like the Marshall Plan. They're going to give aid and resources to make sure that South Vietnam is wonderful. Unfortunately, Diem was not a good horse to back. A metaphorical horse in a race there, if you will. He was incredibly corrupt. He was incredibly wealthy. He was from a privileged background, very much landed. And most of Vietnam was peasant-based. And he treated the ordinary Vietnamese people much like you'd imagine a kind of 17th century aristocrat would treat them in the UK. Not well. So he alienated most of the indigenous population. He gained a position of authority under the French by being Christian and Catholic Christian, which put him at odds with the vast majority of the population, which is Buddhist. And even worse, I mean, if he'd just been Catholic, but he'd been tolerant of the Buddhist principles, that would be fine. But he was actually quite disrespectful and rude and condescending to the Buddhists and Buddhism in Vietnam, which again alienated the vast majority of the population. And as I said, he was incredibly corrupt, lots of nepotism, appointing members of his family. He refuses to hold any elections, even for local councils. He makes sure his supporters are in all power. They don't have to answer for what they're doing. And he takes a lot of the American investment and spends it on things for himself, lavish palaces and so on. So, so that was basically Diem. He wasn't great, but his main attribute was the fact that he was anti-communist and he persecuted communism. And he was determined to resist Ho Chi Minh and North Vietnam. And he wanted South Vietnam to remain independent and non-communist. And to be honest, there weren't really any other obvious options for the Americans. So they decided to back Diem. And they started sending him about $1.6 billion over the 1950s. Eventually, though, Diem would be overthrown by the army leaders because it was so bad. But those that followed him were also horrific. There is a rumour that in 1963, Kennedy ordered the disposal of Diem and sort of encouraged the military. There's no proof of that, but there's a strong suspicion because he becomes such a liability. But this is essentially the problem the Americans have. It was similar to South Korea, although South Korea did sort itself out. But in South Vietnam, it was a corrupt and hated regime that they were trying to defend. And they were purely defending it because it was non-communist. But it was not a regime and not a government that the people of Vietnam could back. So America and democracy and all those sorts of things end up becoming tied in ordinary Vietnamese people's minds with this corrupt alien outside force. And Ho Chi Minh might not be perfect, but he is Vietnamese, okay, and he's promising a better tide of things. Now, that then leads to a lot of people living under the South Vietnamese government, this corrupt government, wanting the North Vietnamese to sort of unify and take over the running, okay? And they will be create a Viet Cong army. It's kind of a terrorist group. So it's the Viet Cong was a nickname, a kind of derogatory nickname, I should say. They were part of a National Front for the Liberation of South Vietnam, or the NFL. And they tried to use guerrilla tactics, they used violence, intimidation, terror tactics effectively, to try and disrupt the workings and operation of the South Vietnamese government. And actually they do start a guerrilla war, effectively a war. They're supplied around the ceasefire border zone on the 17th parallel through something nicknamed the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which were tunnels and supply routes that went through neighbouring Laos and Cambodia to the south. And basically they were supplied with equipment and arms from North Vietnam, who were also secretly being supplied by the Soviet Union and China. More China than Soviet Union, but still. Now this then led to the South Vietnamese government creating something under American advisement called the Strategic Hamlet Program, which was to try and eliminate Viet Cong-controlled areas and basically build villages that would be pro-American and also disrupt villages where there might be Viet Cong settlements. So it's kind of creating these... The idea was to create these model hamlets, model sort of peasant villages that would be a shining beacon about why capitalism's great. Unfortunately, as ever with the Vietnam War, they just cause resentment because all the money and funding gets pocketed by corrupt officials, and actually people are forced to move out. They resent this. So actually, instead of helping win over the support of the South Vietnamese peasants for the Republic's leaders, it actually just alienates them further. And because they know the Americans are involved in helping with this, it also turns them against the Americans. Now, up to the 1960s, the Americans weren't actually sending in troops of their own to fight. They were just sending in what they called advisors. So there was a large military presence, but they were just there to advise and give strategic training and advice on equipment and so on to the South Vietnamese army. Now, which is kind of how you send American troops in without actually committing American troops to a war in Asia, because Kennedy didn't want to get drafted into a war because he knew that would drag American resources and men in, and it would be very difficult to get out again. However, he's assassinated in 1963, and his successor is a guy called Lyndon B. Johnson, who's a bit more hawkish. Okay, he's a bit more militarily aggressive than Kennedy. And also, Johnson has to contest the 1964 presidential elections, and he's up against a guy then called Barry Goldwater, who, I mean, by modern standards, isn't that right wing, but at the time was seen as very right wing, very hawkish for the Republicans. And so in order to stave off this accusation that as a Democrat they were being too soft, they were allowing for the spread of communism, Johnson will start escalating US involvement and actually committing combat troops, turning it from a supporting role to the one where the Americans are doing most of the fighting. So it's really from about 1965 that things escalate. It starts in 1964. Basically, the Americans have been sending out patrol boats, naval vessels around the sea off the coast of North Vietnam, which is called the Gulf of Tonkin. And at one point, one of the American ships declared that they were being fired upon, And there was a retaliation, and that led to Johnson asking Congress for a resolution called the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which basically gave him unlimited powers to deal with the spread of communism in Vietnam. Effectively gave him a blank check and authority to do what he liked out there. In the end, apparently, there were no Vietnamese ships shooting on this American one. It was alleged to be some flying fish that had been misread. So again, it seemed mighty convenient that this happened. But from then on, from February 1965, the Americans start committing much more forcefully to the Vietnam War. It's very different from any American sort of fighting before it, heavy jungle, humid, tropical sort of climate. So they start a thing called Operation Rolling Thunder, where they're just absolutely dropping huge amounts of bombs on North Vietnam, on the cities, factories, army bases, trying to destroy the Ho Chi Minh Trail as well. Cause huge amounts of destruction and devastation. And again, although that's in North Vietnam, it ends up doing a lot of damage that is inflicted in South Vietnam as well. But it undermines the reputation of the Americans. He then starts sending more and more Marines out as combat troops. And they would start landing in Da Nang, just to the south of the 17th parallel. And that would become a main American base and start building up the presence there. Now, this, in theory, they were still only meant to support the South Vietnamese troops. Okay, they were only meant to be there to start doing it. But as it became clear that the South Vietnamese army really didn't want to do any fighting, you know, they were fighting against North Vietnamese, they kind of agreed with them, might even have been related to them, especially the Viet Cong, who are from South Vietnam. So the Americans end up taking on the lead role and doing all the fighting themselves. And it doesn't go particularly well. Okay, one of the big problems that they had was it's one of those things, it looks like it should be easy for the Americans. Here you are, America, certainly one of the two big superpowers. It's a nuclear force. Can't use nuclear weapons though, because that would be seen as wrong. Okay, they realised if they start nuclear bombing the whole of Vietnam, that's just going to alienate people. They can't use those. But it's this major military power, most technologically advanced military in the world, arguably along with the Soviet Union at this stage. Got huge amounts of men and money and resources. And then there's Vietnam, which is seen as agricultural, peasant-based. It's got nothing. So this should be a David and Goliath thing. However, the Viet Cong knew that, and Ho Chi Minh understood the parallels. So the Viet Cong, particularly, and the Viet Cong, remember, those in South Vietnam acting as rebels, they've got several advantages. One is they're fighting in their own territory. They know Vietnam, they know the territory, they know the language. And also they're fighting for their own independence, for their own identity. So their troops, their forces, they're committed to an ideal. And it's one where increasingly most of the native population actually sides with them. The Americans are continually trying to prop up a regime that most people hate, and that's never going to lead to a successful strategy in the long term. The other one was that the Viet Cong never took the Americans on in open battle, and they would have lost that. They would have been humiliated on that one. So they used guerrilla warfare, using the jungles to their advantage, so they could pop up, take shots at Americans through the heavy camouflage, and then disappear through a network of tunnels that they would have, and use those tunnels to hide in. And people would, they'd spend ages in these tunnels. Move around quickly. They're obviously being supplied from the north. They'd also get support from lots of the civilian population, because the Viet Cong fighters were always polite, courteous, and helped the local villages, and they were very much seen as freedom fighters. And so they won over the local support. They had the supplies, and as I said, they were committed to their cause. Unfortunately for the Americans, Okay, so that's kind of why the Viet Cong could take on the Americans. The Viet Cong, sorry, I'm going off a bit of a tangent here, but it's worth bearing in mind, very famously, when the Americans were fighting their war of independence against the British, George Washington knew, he was the general at the time, if you didn't know, General George Washington knew that in order to succeed, all that mattered was the American army just had to avoid defeat. As long as it existed, the British could never succeed in suppressing the American Revolution. The British had to defeat the American army. And eventually, time, money, effort came to a head, and they realized they couldn't, and that's largely why the British ended up defeated. It's kind of the same thing here. The Viet Cong, no, they don't have to defeat the Americans. They don't actually have to beat them in battle. All they have to do is avoid capture, avoid being defeated by the Americans. As long as they keep going, it's going to drain American resources, American morale, and in the end, the Americans will be the ones to give up. And that's exactly what did happen. So again, different sort of objectives in the war here. The Viet Cong just had to avoid being defeated. The Americans actually had to win. And even if they'd won, how were they going to impose their authority on them? Now, the US tactics were in themselves controversial. They start off with the Operation Rolling Thunder, bombing factories and supply routes in North Vietnam, but they will also extend their bombing across the whole of Vietnam. In some ways, it would prove effective because by 1972, extended bombing of North Vietnam does bring them to the negotiation table. But it also, as we said, alienates a huge amount of North and South Vietnamese population. In some ways, the Americans are trying to destroy the forests. And for that reason, they start using chemical weapons. Now, this is so that they can find and see and maybe engage the Viet Cong in an actual battle. However, by using chemical weapons like Agent Orange and napalm, these were brutal, and the legacy is still being felt today. There's still people born with deformities as a result of the poisons ingested then. And the whole use of chemical weapons was incredibly controversial at the time. There's a very, very famous photo of American troops following some Vietnamese children down a road, and there's a naked 10-year-old girl who's basically her clothes are burning because they've been covered in napalm, and it's kind of a petroleum thing, so it sticks to you and it carries on burning. Utterly brutal. The aim of this was to destroy the forest, but and it did that, which is also bad from an environmental point of view. But it alienated even further a lot of Vietnamese opinion. And what else did it do? And it damaged America's reputation in the wider world and in America itself. They also tried to develop tactics called search and destroy. So they carry out regular raids. And here is where we do have a big problem. Because for the Americans, coming from the outside, coming from America, they couldn't tell the difference between a Vietnamese citizen and a member of the Viet Cong. And because of the sort of terror tactics, because the Viet Cong didn't wear a big uniform saying, "Hi, we're Viet Cong," the Americans ended up targeting an awful lot of ordinary Vietnamese people as well. And so they start taking out and brutally attacking ordinary Vietnamese people as well as members of the Viet Cong, which again further alienates most of the population of South Vietnam. It means the war can never be won by the Americans. And that goes into a wider problem. Especially America ends up sending almost 500,000 troops to Vietnam at its height, having 500,000 out there. That's much bigger than the regular American army, so they have to introduce conscription or the draft. Now, the people that are signing up and the people that are drafted don't want to be there. They're usually very young. The average age of soldiers in Vietnam was only 19. They were sort of pumped up. They were kind of made feel like it was a big game, very exciting. They were also scared after they'd been there a while. They were suggering. They didn't understand what they were there for, why they were fighting. And a lot of them got carried away. Okay, I mean, most of the troops, for various reasons, ended up being from poor and minority backgrounds. They didn't really care about democracy or communism or what they were fighting for. There was a large contingent of African-American troops there. And a lot of that, this gets tied up very much with the race relations issues going on in America at the time, because people are saying, hang on, why are we fighting for democracy here when we're not given the right to vote in large parts of America? Why are we treated like second-class citizens? There's some I won't quote it here because it can be a bit offensive, but there's a famous quote by Muhammad Ali when he was meant to, well, he was drafted, and he said he wasn't going to go and fight in Vietnam because no one from Vietnam had ever treated him badly, whereas plenty of white people in America had. And most of the Americans just, they weren't trained, they didn't understand it, and that led to a lot of brutal measures. They got carried away, they burned villages. There was a very famous one called My Lai, and it was discovered there that American troops had ended up just burning this village to the ground because, well, the excuse or the reasoning was that they thought it was a village that was supporting the Viet Cong, but it was just a massacre, men, women, children. It was brutal. And as that came out, it kind of horrified. And a lot of American people would start saying, what are we fighting for here? So this is going on throughout the 60s. If we get to 1968. There's a presidential election. Richard Nixon, now this may sound familiar to people, he says, I've got a cunning plan for ending the entire Vietnam War, but I'm only going to reveal it if I'm elected. And he gets elected and says, we shall do this plan, but I'm still not going to tell anyone. The plan basically involved escalating the war into Cambodia and Laos to destroy the supply routes. So it actually made the war even bigger and was a bit of a disaster, to be honest. Had the end result that both Laos and Cambodia would also go communist, so really wasn't very successful. Now, that was in 1968 when something called the Tet Offensive happened. Now, Tet was the Vietnamese New Year's Day, or kind of big New Year holiday. And the Viet Cong launched a huge number of attacks against American troops and American bases in the south. Now, the Americans were successfully able to push them back and reclaim anything. So the Tet Offensive, in a sense, in a military sense, was a failure. But people watching at home in 1968 in America were saying, hang on, we spent 500,000 soldiers there. We spent $20 billion on this. And they hate us. And they're still attacking us. What are we there for? And it starts turning people very much against Vietnam. And instead of supporting the containment of communism, public opinion in America starts to shift to the idea of we just need to get out of there. It's also Vietnam's the first kind of media war. Journalists are there with colour cameras, there's TV cameras. And so it's the first time people can actually see the brutality of war in their living room on the nightly news. We kind of take that for granted now, but it was the first time. And a lot of people in America were shocked at what they saw and just how much opposition there was to them. The Americans were being seen as the bad guys, and the Americans really did not want to see themselves that way. Now, this led to the growing peace movement in the USA. There were lots of different groups here. They weren't all necessarily natural allies, but they all unified to campaign for peace. So you've got white college students or young men generally who just didn't want to be drafted into Vietnam and were scared about that. The civil rights movement joins in with it because disproportionately young African-American men are being drafted there. Plus, why are they being made to go and fight for democracy when they don't have democratic rights themselves? So that becomes a part of the movement. although not directly, the women's liberation movement gets tied up with it as well, seeing it as imperialism and part of the patriarchy, so they attack it. There's also more traditional conservative types are opposed to it, saying, why are we interfering in another country? We should be isolationists to stay at home. Why are we spending American money on another country? We should be keeping it at home to protect America. And bottom line, just people who felt uncomfortable about what America was doing or what was being done in the name of America. So lots of these groups come together and a media drive starts coordinating them. They get demonstrations across America. Burning the US flag becomes a symbol of this defiance. People, although it was a crime, people would burn their draft cards and say, I'm not going to go and fight in the war. And in the end, at lots of college campuses, there were protests. It led to the National Guard opening fire and killing, I think it was 8 people, at Kent State University in Ohio. So you've got this crazy situation where the American government is turning on its own people who are exercising their freedom of speech to protest against the actions of the American government, and they're being killed for it. And this just undermines all the arguments for democracy and equality, all the things they're meant to be fighting for in Vietnam. And it ties in with a kind of great sense of upheaval and dislocation in 1968, but also into the early 1970s. People just turn against the Vietnam War. But there is also a sense of, it's worth bearing in mind that America up to Vietnam had never lost a war in its history. And so the idea of America losing a war was one. They said, we can't lose a war. And against the USSR, who you know, obviously looking on at this and kind of chuckling metaphorically, said, we can't, what does it say about us if we can't defeat Vietnam? You know, and now obviously there's lots of reasons why Vietnam would be very different from, say, fighting the USSR or China. But, you know, it was a humiliation, and it kind of suggested that America couldn't be relied on to support its allies if they lost, and that communism would spread, and the fear of the dominoes theory. Plus a lot of people saying, we've lost so many people, okay? With the exception of the American Civil War, and I think now the Afghan War, I think this was the deadliest war the USA has ever fought in terms of the number killed. Very poignant if you ever get the chance to go to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. So, well, what was the point of all that? That waste of life and money if South Vietnam ends up becoming communist? Now, I say Richard Nixon had become president, and his great secret plan initially seemed to be pretty much the same, except escalating it illegally. The increased bombing of North Vietnam did force Ho Chi Minh to the table. But Nixon comes up with a new strategy, which is the Vietnamization of the war effort. His plan is to basically get the South Vietnamese forces to take over the fighting. And as he transfers power, fighting responsibility to them, the American troops will start to come home. So they basically will have peace negotiations, and that they'll withdraw from a supporting role, and then that's it, war over, and South Vietnam is still a democracy. This ends up happening at Paris in January 1973. Peace agreement signed, and Nixon describes it as peace with honour. And as far as he's concerned, that's it. American troops can be withdrawn. War's over. And by the 29th of March 1973, all American forces had left Vietnam. Now, sad to say, this is almost a parallel to what happened in Afghanistan last year in 2021. Once the Americans had actually quit and the American forces had gone in South Vietnam, just as happened in Afghanistan, it didn't take long for the opposition forces to come sweeping through. And yes, shortly after, well, it was a few months later, but basically the 1974 into 75, the North Vietnamese launched a major offensive, and they just came sweeping through the rest of Vietnam. into South Vietnam. The South Vietnamese army, who'd been trained up and taken over the fighting, just either threw down their weapons or surrendered quite quickly. They couldn't stand up to them. And it didn't take long for the North Vietnamese to reach the capital of South Vietnam, which was Saigon at the time. They entered it. There were very famous scenes of, from the American embassy, the troops folding up the flag to evacuate, and ordinary Vietnamese who wanted to escape before the communists got there, trying to grab onto the helicopters and just escape from that moment. Powerful footage that kind of contributed to a sense of American defeat here. But yeah, they renamed Saigon after their leader, who died by this point, but it became Ho Chi Minh City. And yeah, by 1975, Vietnam was unified under communist rule. And Cambodia and Laos would also become communist. So in fact, it did seem to create a domino theory. So that, very quickly, there's a lot there. So it's a bit longer than the normal half hour one. But there's a lot there with the Vietnam War. And I hope this has helped explain and identify things. In terms of thinking about it, what were the main effects of the Vietnam War? I mean, from an American point of view, it clearly was a military failure in that they weren't able to defeat the North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong, and ultimately South Vietnam ends up falling to communism. It was a strategic failure, not only because it failed to defeat Ho Chi Minh and protect South Vietnam, but it led to the spread of communism to Laos and Cambodia as well. And perhaps the biggest disaster was kind of the media disaster, or the propaganda disaster. America's reputation lies in tatters. It's divided its own country. You know, the population is divided. It leads to distrust in its own government, and a sense of humiliation and failure that will kind of perpetuate throughout the 1970s in America. And there were other reasons for that, but it does lead to this sense of decay and failure and humiliation, and that America's losing the Cold War, in a sense. It wasn't, but it adds to that general sense. And so this is going to contribute to, in the 1970s, trying to improve relations with communists, particularly with China, in order to create a more peaceful situation where the Allies can work together. So it's actually going to lead to detente, although this had started before, a thing called detente, an improving of relations that's going to last into the up to about 1979-1980, where US policy will change and it will become a lot less aggressive and more introspective. And also it's going to lead to the Americans becoming much more hesitant until 2001, of actually committing troops to, foreign wars. And well, I have to say, unfortunately, Iraq and Afghanistan kind of went the same way as Vietnam. That's a different kettle of fish. That's post-Cold War. And so it does lead to the Americans becoming very hesitant to commit troops to overseas wars. But it's tied up in all sorts of things. So very quickly, that's the Vietnam War in a nutshell. Really interesting story. I've barely scratched the surface with it here. I would recommend going into a lot more detail about it, and obviously there's lots of movies about this, and that again shows America and Americans trying to come to terms with it, trying to explain what happens. It had a huge impact on, of all the young men coming back, and how politics and society would develop in the 70s into the 80s on into the 90s and so on. So really useful and interesting part of the history course that shows the development of the Cold War. So in the next episode, I'm going to look at detente, which I've already touched on before, but I'm going to look at how it developed in the 1970s, the more peaceful relations that develop before moving on to that all falling apart with Afghanistan. So in a sense, the 1970s are almost a pause in the Cold War, but I'll talk about that next time. Hope this has been useful, and I will speak to you again at some point in the future. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.